May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God. Amen. Nothing quite undermines productivity like being interrupted. Have you ever had the experience of starting the day with a goal in mind, only to get to the end of the day and realize that you never even got started on it? Those who have been new parents are probably familiar with the phenomenon of just how hard it is to complete the simple task of getting a shower with a newborn in the house. In life, we find that frequently there are other needs and interruptions that can thwart what we initially set out to do. I sure feel for Jesus in our passage for today. Did you notice how many times he's interrupted? How many times Jesus is in the middle of one thing when quite suddenly something else is required of him? It is as Jesus is walking along that he sees Matthew, and we don't really know what it is he sees in him, but he sees that he has a need, and Jesus calls him, "Follow me." And then it is as they are sitting at a dinner party that Jesus is hosting that some Pharisees give him the third degree about those he dines with. And as he is answering their concerns, John's disciples show up and have further questions about Jesus and his disciples' behavior. And while he's in the middle of explaining that to John's disciples, a leader arrives, kneels before him, and urges him to come to his daughter who has just died. Jesus gets up to follow the man. And a woman who has suffered for 12 years reaches out to touch the fringe of his cloak, so he turns to address her as well before resuming his travel. And once more, when he arrives at the house where the little girl is, he's interrupted by this crowd that's gathered there to mourn her. Finally, he puts them outside and heals the leader's daughter. If Jesus were like us, after such a series of interruptions, he might look around and say to himself, "What was it I was doing?" I wonder if Jesus ever got to finish supper. Matthew was a tax collector, which meant that he colluded with the empire that occupied his country to impose taxation on his own people. Additionally, he likely made his living by demanding excess taxation that he then pocketed. Now, it's important to know that the taxes Matthew collected were not property taxes or income taxes. His job was to collect taxes on the goods that were transported along the road where his station was, which means that he taxed folks who transported their goods to urban markets. People like, say, fishermen. Fishermen like Peter, Andrew, James, and John. Others whom Jesus had called, who also instantly and definitively responded to that call, "Follow me." I wonder how those fishermen felt about Jesus calling a tax collector to join their ranks. Notice that in forming his group of disciples, Jesus calls men out of conflicting former lives and into a new reality shaped by God's kingdom values. Well, Matthew heeds Jesus' call, gets up, and follows. But we don't know what, if anything, he knew about who Jesus was and what he was about. Still, he obediently follows when Jesus calls, highlighting both Jesus' authority and Matthew's obedience. But notice that Matthew has missed the Sermon on the Mount entirely. That famous sermon of Jesus where he lays out the values of God's kingdom, that wrapped up in chapter 7. We're in chapter 9. So instead of the benefit the other disciples had of getting to hear Jesus lay out all of his values in a sermon, and we know how much people can get out of well-crafted sermons, right? Instead, Matthew learns by watching and listening to the way Jesus responds to those he encounters. Matthew's is an on-the-job initiation into what it means to follow Jesus. Not hours into his new allegiance, Matthew finds himself at dinner with former colleagues. Many tax collectors and sinners came and were sitting with Jesus and his disciples. Well, that had to be awkward. Is there tension between Matthew, this very newly former tax collector, and the tax collectors who share the table with Jesus? Do they even know that Matthew has defected? And does the presence of these other collectors underscore for Matthew just what it is he's giving up? Does he have any second thoughts? But look at what Matthew learns sitting at that table. What he learns about God's kingdom values revealed through how Jesus handles this series of interruptions. When the Pharisees challenge the company Jesus keeps, Jesus responds, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." Jesus is telling his dinner guests that if it seems like he's eating with the wrong kind of folks, well, that's because it's the wrong kind of folks who need him. And I wonder if Matthew reviews in his mind the mercy Jesus extended to him with those two little words, "Follow me." Does Matthew understand that the physician called to him because in colluding with the empire, he was suffering from a terrible spiritual sickness? As we said, this is not the only interruption to Jesus' dinner. Matthew's crash course in learning God's kingdom values continues as he overhears another complaint brought to Jesus. This time, one that seems like especially friendly fire as it's coming from John the Baptist's disciples. They come with questions about the absence of fasting as a spiritual practice among Jesus' disciples. They want to know why they and the Pharisees fast. But Jesus and his disciples do not. Now, fasting can be a means of seeking help from God. Forgiveness of sin, healing, spiritual insight. But Jesus tells them that fasting isn't appropriate right now because the source of those things is present in the flesh. The disciples don't need to fast because they have direct access to forgiveness, healing, and spiritual insight through Jesus. Now, Jesus does not condemn fasting. He just says now is not the time for it. It kind of reminds me of a conversation our family often has on vacation. Maybe you have one similar. It gets to be the last day and somebody says, "I don't want vacation to be over." And I try to encourage, it's not over yet. There will be time to be sad when it is. Don't spend vacation time being pre-sad. The same idea applies here. Jesus isn't dismissing the value of fasting. He's just telling John's disciples that his disciples will not miss the blessing that is the current moment. Jesus demonstrates there's something unique about the right now. This set of circumstances is new, but it's also temporary. And the time for fasting will return because we know that eventually Jesus will be taken from them. I wonder if in hearing this, Matthew is coming to understand that he's been invited into this special temporary moment and space. Could he possibly have any understanding of what that all means? Well, he doesn't have much time to consider it because Jesus is interrupted again, and this time by the desperation of a grieving father, most likely a leader in the synagogue. Now, we can't know for sure what it cost this man to kneel at Jesus' feet and ask for help. But it seems that he understood what Jesus had been trying to explain to the Pharisees at dinner, that Jesus came not for the well, but for those who are sick. The leader understood that Jesus came not for the ones confident in their own position and control over the events of their lives, but for those who could recognize the limits of their power and abilities. This leader understood his limit, and so came to the one who could help him, knelt at his feet, and confessed confidence that even though his daughter had died, Jesus held the ability to restore her to life. Notice that just as Matthew immediately got up and followed when Jesus called, Jesus gets up and follows as soon as this father tells of his need. But as soon as he begins to follow the leader home, a woman interrupts without even intending to. She'd suffered from bleeding for 12 years, perhaps longer than the little one who had died had even lived. And like that leader, this woman knew that Jesus could be the source of her healing, and she planned not even to bother him, but to quietly touch the fringe of his cloak he wouldn't even ever have to know. But she got caught. Jesus turned, saw her, and commended her wisdom in seeking her healing. "Take heart, daughter, your faith has made you well." She was healed, and Jesus continued on to fulfill what he had implicitly agreed to do for that leader. And Jesus arrives at the leader's house, greeted by a scene of mourners making a spectacle of grieving the little girl. He dismissed them and their mockery, took the girl by the hand, and restored her to life. Now, this is the final interruption and healing of our passage. But if we were to continue reading chapter 9, we'd see that Jesus healed at least three more people as he continued on his way. Our passage for today takes us through multiple interactions between Jesus and others. We experience these encounters as people who already know the entire arc of Jesus' story. But I can't help but continue to wonder what it was like for Matthew. In his first day as one of Jesus' followers, Matthew witnesses some who challenge Jesus, his ministry, and his authority. But he also witnesses others who come to Jesus, fully understanding their own limitations, and who throw themselves on his mercy. I wonder what went through Matthew's mind as he settled in to sleep that night. No matter how many questions he'd had about what he'd gotten himself into, and I'm sure there were many, I have to imagine that at the very least, he understood that this one he now follows has and makes time for people. Jesus has and makes time for people like Matthew, who didn't yet know their own need. Jesus makes and has time for people who want to find fault in the way he did things. And Jesus has and makes time for people who are far ahead of the rest, who already understood that Jesus held the keys to their saving. May this be our takeaway too. Jesus has and makes time for people. People like us. Those who know they need him and those who don't. Those who defiantly challenge him and those fully open to his power. Across the board, Jesus makes time, consistently extending mercy and grace. May we find comfort knowing that Jesus has time and mercy and grace for us no matter where we find ourselves today. And may we aspire to follow Jesus in this kind of interruptibility as we seek to obey his command, follow me, as disciples in our world. Thanks be to God. Amen.